The next case is 072395, Cincinnati Bar Association versus William Farrell. Mr. Mueller.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm John Mueller from Cincinnati, representing William Farrell, respondent in a discipline proceeding, and the objector in this case. With court's permission, I will proceed. And initially, I note Mr. Farrell reserves 5 minutes of argument time for rebuttal. Over approximately 18 months, William I. Farrell engaged in an inexplicable, aberrant course of conduct involving fabrications of letters and forgery of his wife's signature on a power of attorney that Mr. Farrell used to borrow money to finance living expenses. Mr. Farrell, up to that point in time, had an unblemished career as a lawyer with no misconduct. Mr. Farrell had a career in which he had never even been accused of deceit or misrepresentation. Mr. Farrell offers no explanation and can offer no explanation for this inexplicable and aberrant behavior, though he acknowledges, in fact stipulated for purposes of trial, that he engaged in the conduct on which the Cincinnati Bar Association based its complaint of misconduct. Mr. Farrell further stipulated that the conduct to which he stipulated amounted to the violations of the disciplinary rules then in effect that the bar accused him of violating. Mr. Farrell, as part of the stipulation, also entered into an agreement with the Cincinnati Bar Association for a recommended discipline. They agreed to recommend that this court suspend Mr. Farrell for a term of 1 year on conditions that he continue treatment with a mental health professional until the mental health professional released Mr. Farrell from further treatment for a condition involving depression that existed during the time of the misconduct, but which Mr. Farrell acknowledges was not the cause of his misconduct. Mr. Farrell does not allege that he was motivated to do what he did, or that he did what he did because of some compulsion or condition resulting from or relating to this mental health condition of depressive disorder. He does, however, want this court to recognize that this depressive condition existed during the time of this misconduct. After trial to the board recommended that this court suspend Mr. Farrell from the practice of law for 2 years, with the final 12 months stayed for a term of probation continuing until February 2011, when Mr. Farrell's contract with the Ohio Lawyers Assistance Program would terminate, and conditioned upon Mr. Farrell successfully completing his OLAP contract and having no new disciplinary violations. Mr. Farrell has no objections to the probation being linked to the performance under his contract with OLAP, and he certainly has no objection to the condition of the no new disciplinary violations. But Mr. Farrell does object to the imposition of a 2-year suspension with a final 12-month stay. Mr. Farrell believes that this court can protect the public by imposing a fully stayed term of suspension. Mr. Farrell's dishonesty involved no client. He made no dishonest statement to any client. He made no dishonest statement to advance the interests of a client. His dishonesty existed in private relations with his wife and in a private dealing with a bank that had already agreed to lend him money on a second mortgage.
Counsel, is that debt repaid, $75,000 to the bank?
Not as of today, Your Honor.
Has any payments been made towards restitution to the bank for this activity?
No, Your Honor.
And has he paid his monitoring fees? I noticed in the documents we have before us, the findings of fact and conclusion of the law, and one of the footnotes is that he has failed to pay his monitoring fee to OLAP. Is that any payments been made in that direction?
No, Your Honor. Mr. Farrell made an arrangement with OLAP that he could defer the payment of the monitoring fees so long as by the time he completed the agreement term, that he was then current. He has been unable, because of other financial obligations, to make.
Is he working?
He is still practicing law, Your Honor. He's in the middle of a divorce, which has proven to be rather costly and I believe has exacerbated the financial pressures that he faced.
Mr. Mueller, he also involved another attorney in this activity, in notarization of a forged signature. Is that correct?
Yes.
So
yes,
there was harm to other individuals. I mean, you look at the bank, which we talked about, the loan, which is still unpaid, and then Mr. Gottesman already received discipline from this court. Is that correct?
Mr. Gottesman has received discipline, and as a consequence, I would agree that Mr. Gottesman has experienced harm. The bank has a fully secured position on the real estate, and though it has yet to be paid, we anticipate that it will be paid. And so although it faces potential harm, as of today, the bank has suffered no actual harm from the forgery. Now, it does face a risk, and Mr. Farrell acknowledges that it faces a risk of harm. But as of now, no harm has yet occurred to the bank.
Has there been any prosecution threatened against your client?
No, Your Honor.
Right. For the forgeries?
No, Your Honor.
Is there, this hasn't been argued, but isn't, should we consider whether there's any harm to the officers and the employees of Fifth Third Bank, of Kroger, and of what, Uniserve, for forging their names on letters that look very authentic to convince his wife that he had this higher income than he actually had? I mean, I think any of us would think we wouldn't want to have our names used fraudulently to try to convince someone that an untruthful act was occurring. Should we consider that or not? Is that all part of the personal problem with his wife?
This court certainly could extend the concept of the scope of harm that it will consider to harm for which those individuals would have a private remedy if these letters had been published, had been disseminated to the public, as opposed to merely delivered to Mr. Farrell's wife. I think there may be technical violations.
Aren't they a matter of public record now?
They are because Ms. Farrell chose to have her lawyer, or had her lawyer chose to attach those to a filing in a court and make it a public record. That was conduct by Ms. Farrell, not Mr. Farrell.
Well, but it is possible, is it not, in a situation like this, that a wife receiving this fraudulent letter believes her husband has this position with a company, and she's unhappy with that, or for some reason she doesn't see them. So she sends a letter to the CEO of Fifth Third Bank, for example, and causes him to have to unravel the fraud. That certainly is harm. That's taking his time, and you can do it with the Kroger folks or whoever it is. He used their names to convince her of something that was not true. And while she didn't do that here, we have to look at other cases and tell lawyers, you know, this is really serious. I think his conduct is very serious because he has this pattern of lying, just lying, 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 and not just to his wife, but to the bank, to Fifth Third. And to me, to say that, well, we put him out for 2 years, but we suspend all that, is a very, very light penalty for somebody who thinks the way and acts the way Mr. Farrell has acted. Now, that's a speech, but you can respond if you want, but you know where I'm thinking.
I understand. I believe that had those events occurred, had Ms. Farrell written a letter to the president of Shakely or to someone at Fifth Third Bank, we would be facing an entirely different situation, and I would acknowledge that in that case, Mr. Farrell's private conduct had spilled over and caused and created public harm, and his situation would be more serious, and the consequences would be more severe than they are here. And I understand this court must look at the concept of the scope of harm that it will consider in light of all of the cases that could come before it. I'm simply saying in this particular case, given Mr. Farrell's conduct and the specific harms that have occurred in this case, that we believe, given the discipline this court has meted out for similar conduct in the past, that a 2-year suspension, 1-year stayed is too severe, and that either 2 years fully stayed on those conditions, or the time that Mr. Farrell agreed initially with the Cincinnati Bar Association as the appropriate discipline should be the discipline this court imposes. The board was motivated to recommend as severe a sanction it did because the board looked at this case as comparing more closely to the McMahon case than we believe it compares. In the brief, I detail the differences between the circumstances in McMahon and the misconduct in McMahon from the circumstances in this case and the discipline that should be meted out, or we believe should be meted out in this case. This court suspended McMahon for an actual term because McMahon flagrantly violated his duty to the legal system by attempting to advance his client's interests with evidence that he knowingly fabricated. Mr. Farrell's fabrications and forgery involved no evidence in any legal or judicial proceeding. Those fabrications and his forgery involved no attempt to advance a client's interest in any legal or judicial proceeding. I submit that dishonesty involving the integrity of the judicial process itself is substantially more severe.
Counsel, how did he get the letterhead that he used? Didn't find the answer to that in reading through all this information, but looking at the letterhead, it seems pretty authentic. Postal Service, Fifth Third, the other executives that have had their names put on these letters.
I have no recollection of where Mr. Farrell obtained the letterhead for the Postal Service. The Shakely International, the first exhibit that was attached to the complaint, came from a letter that Mr. Farrell received in the course of his law practice, Shakely International being a workers' comp consultant And apparently, Mr. Farrell had correspondence in one of those cases with the Shakely folks. He copied that letterhead and used the copy with the remaining body deleted to create the letter. The correspondence from Fifth Third, I believe, was correspondence that he had received on other transactions he had had privately with Fifth Third Bank. And again, he went through the same fabrication process.
Mr. Mueller and McMahon, as you point out, this was to advance the client's interests. Here, couldn't we argue that this was to advance your own client's interest? I mean, the respondent is advancing his own interest. There's no excuse that he was representing anyone.
Mr. Farrell undoubtedly did what he did out of a motivation for his own self-interests, and he acted out of self-interest. This court has never said that misconduct, deceit, misrepresentation by a lawyer in advance of his own interests is more serious than misrepresentation and deceit involving the legal process, involving fabrication of evidence, and involving clients. And in each of those other instances, this court has clearly announced that those are reprehensible acts. Mr. Farrell's acts are clearly reprehensible, but the question is whether they are more serious than the acts of those who undermine the integrity of the legal process by similar conduct. And in those cases, those people have received discipline no more severe than what the board proposes for Mr. Farrell. Given the history of misconduct discipline that this court has issued, we believe the recommended discipline is simply too severe and disproportionate based on the existing history of precedent for similar misconduct.
At least with respect to the notarized forged document, I mean, that involves a legal document and is different than a single letter, in fact. I mean, so you can't really say this was solely private conduct.
To the extent that it involved someone outside of the marital relationship, it was more public than the others.
It was a notarized document saying this signature is valid and true, and this was not the case.
Mr. Gottesman is the one who made that statement, and he has been punished. He made that statement on the basis of a representation from Mr. Farrell. And that is, in my view, and Mr. Farrell acknowledges, terrible conduct to mislead another lawyer.
Mr. Mueller, we've indicated, and we're trying to regulate 50,000 lawyers in our state. Lawyers who choose to engage in fabrication of evidence, deceit, misrepresentation, and distortion of truth do so at their peril. They are admonished the practice of law is not a right, and our code of professional responsibility demands far more of those in our profession. We need to adhere to those principles.
And a decision in this case would adhere to those principles, even if you do not impose the recommended sanction, because Mr. Farrell's conduct involved no evidence. It involved no legal proceeding. It involved no fabrication of a court document. It in no way involved any legal proceeding or judicial proceeding.
But it caused the bank to grant a loan based upon a fraudulent affidavit or statement that his wife knew nothing about.
Unquestionably, the bank relied on it and relied on the notary seal that and the notary's jurat that Mr. Farrell induced Mr. Gottesman to put on that instrument specifically for that purpose. We acknowledge that Mr. Farrell's conduct is terrible, We just don't believe that in this particular circumstance, his conduct merits the actual timeout for 1 year.
You use your time, Mr. Mueller.
Thank you.
Mr. McAdams. Let me begin, Mr. McAdams. The Cincinnati Bar Association at one point agreed that Mr. Farrell should be suspended from the practice of law for 2 years, but that should be stayed based on conditions. As I read your brief, you've changed your mind and now agree with the board's recommendation that there be a 2 year suspension with 1 year stayed. What changed your mind?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. That was the position of the Cincinnati Bar Association originally, and three factors came into play that changed the position of the Bar Association. The most important of those factors being the testimony that was presented in November before the hearing panel. The Bar Association was under the impression that Mr. Farrell was going to rely on his OLAP contract and essentially say that he was suffering from some mental impairment and that is why this behavior occurred. What we did not realize is that he was going to say, yes, I've got some kind of mental impairment, but I'm not saying that that was the cause of my action. In fact, when he testified in Columbus in November, essentially what he said is, I did it, and I don't know why I did it. And I think the panel picked up on that, and the panel realized that if he doesn't know why he did it, there's no reason to believe that he's going to stop doing it and that he won't do it again. He wasn't even complying with his OLAP agreement at that time. He hadn't made all of his payments, and although he says now, well, I'm having some financial difficulties, we were able to show at that hearing that his financial difficulties were still allowing him to live a very lavish lifestyle. So we were fooled, and once we realized what his testimony was, once we realized that he was not going to show any remorse, our position changed as to what the sanction should be. When the respondent says that this involved only private conduct and that no one was hurt, yes, Zach Gottemans was hurt, but his ex-wife was also hurt, and if you want to extend that any further, his daughter was hurt. His daughter comes into this thinking she's going to have a two-parent family. Now she has a single parent. And it was odd at that hearing in November to hear him say that one of the things I was concerned with, one of the reasons I was trying to show that I was making more money when in fact I wasn't making more money, one of the things I was trying to protect was my family, and the net result of that was that he lost his family.
Well, counsel, I don't think, usually get our discipline into domestic concerns. I mean, we talk about harm to clients. Lots of lawyers, including myself, have harmed their families by spending too much time tending to business and politics or whatever else we do. This is the first time I've heard that as a discussion of the nature of the harm. I come back to Justice Moyer's question. You were at the hearing, were you not?
Correct.
And you didn't change your position at the hearing.
At the hearing, when I was asked that question, I remember saying that we made a deal. But upon hearing the respondent's testimony, we realized that we were dealing with something that we weren't dealing with when we made that deal. Yes, a lawyer may have a life that makes it difficult for his private life. It may have an impact on his private life. But if you're involved in politics and that's taking you away from your home life, that's honest. If your outside life is dishonest, I don't see a distinction between a dishonest private life and a dishonest professional life. And this man's private life was spilling over into his professional life in a very dishonest way, because he's doing things and misrepresenting things. And it did involve another lawyer. It involved two other lawyers, because his wife is a lawyer. And his wife quit her job in reliance upon what this man was saying to her. I think there's a difference between your family just getting mad because you're not home for dinner, and then you lose your family because of your dishonest acts as a lawyer. I hold lawyers to a higher standard than that.
Should we be concerned at all about, I didn't see it in your brief, maybe I missed it, or in the board's analysis, with the fact that he used like the letterhead of Fifth Third Bank, with including their logo, and used the names of others in entities, Postal Service and other entities, Kroger, used their names on forged letters, forged their names or their signatures on letters to convince his wife that he was actually earning more money than he was earning. Should that be a concern of ours? That there's no, they're not obviously here, and there's no evidence that they were harmed, but it does seem to me that using someone's name on a letter, forging someone's name on a letter to convince someone else that you've gotten a benefit or whatever, should we be concerned about that or not?
Yes, I think you should be very concerned about that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McAdams. Mr. Mueller, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
I have just a couple of points that I want to make. Mr. Farrell is in compliance with his OLAP agreement, and OLAP acknowledges that Mr. Farrell complies with every term of his agreement. They have agreed to the deferral of the monitoring fees. The failure to pay those monitoring fees in no way is an act of noncompliance with that agreement. The bar says
to
the...
Let me ask, is his program with OLAP, is that for treatment or his condition, the mental condition that I think everybody agrees he says didn't cause him to act the way he acted here? Is that what there's not an alcoholism or substance abuse problem?
There is no alcoholism, there is no substance abuse, but the depressive conduct has caused Mr. Farrell at times to hide his head in the sand and fail to address issues. Mr. Farrell also tends to want to resolve things by believing that things in the future will be different. He wrote these letters to give the impression that he was going to make more money because he anticipated that his practice would become more lucrative and more profitable, and then he would not have the issue with his wife that he believed he had. This kind of conduct requires some treatment and assistance from both his mental health practitioner and from the folks at OLAP. But OLAP is doing a supportive type of assistance, and the direct assistance is the assistance Mr. Farrell obtains from the mental health practitioner with whom he treats.
Did his depression, I drew the conclusion, I guess, from the briefs, that his depression didn't precede his issues with his wife about needs to make more money and so forth, and that got him into these dishonest acts. Was he depressed then? Is that the argument?
Yes. The diagnosis occurred after the fabrications and the forgery came to light. But the depressive conduct was based on or existed because of a depressive condition that OLAP and Mr. Farrell's private mental health practitioner has determined existed before these events came to light.
Counselor, do you have medical documentation that but for his mental condition he would not have done these acts?
No, Your Honor, and we've never maintained that.
This is akin to an attorney that comes in here and is either drug involved or alcohol involved or so severely mentally ill and has professional medical documentation that the condition under which they suffer led them to commit the offenses for which they are being disciplined. We're not talking about that here.
No, no, we are not, Your Honor.
Okay.
No, I'm just interested in when it began and how much it might have contributed. There's no question that he's not claiming that it caused his conduct, but it's just
it is simply a condition that existed
right
at the time and I believe contributed to him deciding to resolve the issue in the way he did. This postponement by other conduct that I'll worry about later is indicative of the manifestation of his other depressive condition, which was to avoid addressing issues head on.
You've used your time, Mr. Mueller.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshal, please adjourn court.